Hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of Databook, a Chief Healthcare Executive podcast. My name is Skylar Jeremias, and I'm an assistant editor at CHE. Today, I will be joined by Kate Cordell and Ken Connect, co-founders of Opeka. We discussed how their person-centered intelligence solution can help children and their families better manage and coordinate mental health services across multiple agencies. We also talked about how this tool can improve the workload of physicians and emergency department staff, as well as healthcare costs. So to start us off, could you just introduce yourselves and tell us a bit about Opeka as a whole?
Sure. So I'm Kate Cordell and co-founder of Opeka.
Yes, Ken Connect, co-founder of Opeka.
Our mission is to improve well-being. And really, the way that we look at that is taking the view of the person in care and what kind of care. That could be really any kind of care. We're focusing on mental health and foster care to begin with, but really it is about unifying care and back into that whole person. And so my background and taking interest in that area is that I actually started out at the lab bench doing work on mental illness and in terms of schizophrenia and other types of mental illness, actually with a looking at DNA from schizophrenic brains. And decided, though, after some time doing research, that there was a social component to mental illness and mental health that really wasn't being captured through the medical model lens, and got my PhD in social welfare from UC Berkeley and began to put together a multiple view of mental health from a social, biological, psychological, medical, environmental model and framework rather than one perspective, and really trying to take the perspective of the person in care themselves, as I mentioned. So that's my background, what we do. I also have a master's in statistics and was doing AI back in 1999 before it became popular. So I have been applying that data science perspective as well to mental health and really brought more broadly well-being, which covers any kind of health and human service, including social services as well.
What are some of the barriers to mental health care that children and families face that technology can help overcome?
That's a great question. Right now, there's a lot of apps coming on board that try to address mental health through different modalities of service. So whether that be talk therapy or that be cognitive behavioral therapy, maybe some monitoring your sleep. Obviously exercise and nutrition can affect your mental health and mental well-being. But it really needs to be a personal, very specific approach for the person in care that may go across a lot of these different modalities. And so that's what we try to do, is we try to bring that together so that you're looking at the whole person. So we don't actually provide any kind of service ourselves. What we do is we try to help the person in care figure out what's working for them. So if they're working on some mindfulness, then we can help figure out if that is working to reduce your anxiety. If they are in talk therapy, we can help to figure out if that is helping them meet their goals. So that is kind of the way that we bring technology to better answer the question, what works for me specifically, and how can I improve my well-being? So I think there's a lot of options for people in care, especially now, but honestly, what works and what is working is the big question. There isn't a lot of outcomes related to those different modalities in terms of knowing that they're actually impacting and that suicide rates are decreasing and that feelings of isolation are decreasing and that well-being is improving. We have no evidence that is the case. And so that's what we're trying to identify.
Your company recently launched your person-centered intelligence solution, also known as PCIS, as a way to help patients better coordinate mental health care across multiple agencies.
Yeah, we're putting the pieces together.
Could you explain how this solution works and how it improves the patient experience?
Sure. Yeah. So when you're talking about mental health and foster care, especially, there are multiple different types of programs you're likely to be involved in. So you're going to have your primary care related to your mental health. A lot of times you may have pain management, you may have substance use, you may have Social programs that you're involved in. If you're a foster youth, you may have placements and social workers that you are involved in. If you have any crises related to mental health, then you'll have emergency room staff and other outpatient programs that you're involved in. So a lot of times these are very disjointed services that folks receive, and they are the ones, the people in care are the ones that need to coordinate all that advice. And a lot of times that advice can be conflicting and the schedules can be difficult to maintain. And so what this does is it allows the person in care to release information based on their own desires from one program to the next. So if you want your mental health program to have some information about your sobriety progress, you can release that substance use information to your mental health counselor. Or if you're in the emergency room and you've already pre-authorized that, the emergency staff can look at your substance use program sobriety. Then when you go in for pain management for a true physical need, and they may have questions on your authenticity, they have that ability to look at a system and see that you're in programs, that you are receiving help, you are making progress, but you do have pain management concerns at this moment. So really helping bring that to get that story together in one place, so you're not new to everybody where they may be questioning why you're here.
How does your technology help to individualize care and decipher which patients are at a higher mental health risk than others?
Yeah. Again, great question. Although I have to say, typically, a lot of the systems will look at risk in terms of who's going to fail, who's going to cost the most, who's going to, be the most likely to drop out of the program, all of these negative outcomes. We don't actually do that. We've turned the model on its head. We have what we call success-focused artificial intelligence, in which we look for who's going to succeed and who has succeeded, who has a story similar to yours. So what we do is we have a proprietary AI matching where we can find who has a story similar to your story that has done well in this program. And what did they do for themselves, or what are the linkages and the referrals and the services that they received help them move to that path of success, so that you start out with the new person who enters care with a roadmap of what they could try that's been successful for similar people in the past. And so because we're not looking for who's going to fail, we're looking for how did somebody succeed, even though all the models would predict they would fail. What was it that they did different? How did they succeed? And how can we apply that to the next person and get more people on that trajectory for success?
What benefits and support does your tool provide for patients, guardians, and other family members of some of these children?
Yeah, so for for kids that are in care, a lot of times parents don't have as much information as they could use in terms of understanding that child's progress in care. It really is a conversation oftentimes between that child and the clinicians or their care team. Sometimes the parents are involved, sometimes they're not. Sometimes it's during school hours where the parents can't be there. And so the child's meeting alone with those clinicians, and the parents are often left out. And so what this can do is allow, of course, depending on age of the child and so forth and their assent, to share information about their progress on some of the information, maybe not everything, because our model allows you to share right down to an individual question in what we collect. So if you wanted your parents to know, I just want my parents to know what my anxiety level is right now, so that they, you know, so that they know if I'm getting really irritated or I'm getting really anxious, that they should back off. Right. So in that case, you know, you could share with the parents the child's anxiety level and the progress over time, so that you're tracking on that day to day, you know, week to week. And the parents can see over time as the patterns increase and the anxiety levels increase, and that child is more likely and apt to have a crisis, they can respond appropriately and effectively for that child, knowing that it is there's something in that child's life that is relating to their anxiety that's driving that kind of upward, and they can even help address that. They can help talk to the child. They can help maybe even be that intervention themselves to help the child's anxiety reduce, because maybe it's a school thing, maybe it's a teacher thing, maybe it's a friend thing, but whatever that is, it helps give that parent the open door to begin that conversation where a lot of times the way it happens right now is the parents have no idea until the kid's in crisis. And is up on the roof, you know, and we're calling 911, and we never knew how it got there. We had no idea that we were on the verge of this crisis. So it gives the parents a lot more ability with the child or the youth's agreement to help monitor that child or youth for their own health and safety.
How can disadvantaged children who may not have access to health insurance, mental health care, or familial support access your solution? Are you getting involved with child support organizations or social workers, or is the internet the only way to find your tools?
Yeah, so we are getting involved with a lot of, actually, Ken, I don't know if you wanna jump in here because you're helping us get on with the Child Abuse Prevention Network. So I'll pass it over to you.
So yeah, we're working right now with a lot of different community-based organizations and groups that help children. Child welfare, for example, is a big space for us right now because they have really complex needs. So they're helping them complete their assessments, get them into the system, which feeds our models and shows the progress and resilience.
Yeah, and we're talking with Child Abuse Prevention Networks as well, and trying to pick their brain about how we can better serve, youth that are at risk of welfare issues. We're also talking to other social programs that help with homelessness, and that could be families who have experienced homelessness as well for children and youth. So we are really trying to get out there and get the word out that there are solutions, there are ways that we can unify care to better serve, you know, those who are most in need of these types of programs.
How does this tool impact the workload for providers and other entities working with these patients?
Yeah, so we have worked extremely hard not to be a burden. And in fact, we reduce burden. So our thesis is that there will never be any dual entry for data, and that a family will never have to answer a question twice. Right now, as it stands, families go around to these different programs, they tell their stories over and over and over. Because we build story maps, we can share those story maps between one program and another with the approval of the family. And so the family doesn't need to retell their story. They can quickly see in that story map, not just loads and loads of clinical notes. We build a visual story map so they can see the family story visually. They can read the clinical notes if they want, but they can see really quickly the story of that family, and they can watch the progress over time. And so for staff, it reduces the burden because they're not reading loads and loads of pages. They can quickly see, there's a socioeconomic status issue, a transportation concern, this family's experienced witness to community violence. Maybe I'll ask them about that, but maybe not in the first day. Now I know that's there. I know that's in the background. I know this family is experiencing this, but I don't have to ask on day one. Tell me everything from the beginning of your life all over again. So it's going to really reduce the amount of effort the clinicians have to do on that first minute of meeting a family, because they've got that picture already that this family has really experienced some homelessness. They've experienced, you know, loss of jobs. Anyway, that whole story. And then on top of that, we do automate all of the exchange between different program systems. So in fact, we can actually work in the background without clinicians ever knowing that we're there, because we can push the data from one system to another. We have a uniform model that organizes information around a person and a family in care. And that means that we can take information from any electronic system, as long as it's about a person or family, put it into our model and push it into any other electronic system. So we are the glue between those electronic systems, and we don't actually have to ever be present in terms of what the staff sees, because they're just going to see the information show up in the same system. They log in anyway. They won't know that we're in the background pulling it from the school's record, pulling it from the probation record, and pushing it into their system. Now, we do have the ability for anyone to log in if they would want to, and we also support single sign-on. So many of our customers launch pieces right from within their existing electronic record and don't have to sign in again. So it's an easier way to view that story map and that information, collect that information. We can automate the collection of assessments if they need. So if they want to ask the family on a monthly basis about their well-being or their safety, you can automate that. And those questions can go out to the family. So you never have to think about it. The information just populates in your system. In terms of, I often get the question about families' willingness to respond. When a family feels that they're answering information that's going to get them help, they're always responsive. When a family feels that they're answering questions that are going to be useless or put a label on them, they're not going to be responsive. So if the questions are compassionate questions to help them get care, then the response rate is extremely high because these families are in programs generally because they want care, they want help. And so there is an opportunity to collect a lot more information about a family if you're doing it in a compassionate way and you're asking questions that are truly going to lead to information that will help them receive the services and the care that they need. So it reduces the burden on staff by automating the collection of data, by automating the exchange of data, by not having to ask the family the same questions over and over again, and by really getting to that answer more quickly and being able to serve that family better because you're sharing that information with other partners in the system of care.
And how is this tool anticipated to impact the effects that mental health has on emergency department staff and hospital costs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I did touch on that with the scenario of somebody coming into the emergency room department and you being able to, as an emergency room staff, get information that was released, pre-authorized for release in case someone ends up in emergency room. So just to walk that through a little bit more. So if you're a person in a substance abuse program or substance use program, and you know that there is a possibility that maybe you're managing pain or you are new into your sobriety, you know there's a possibility that you might end up in an emergency room, you can pre-authorize release of certain information for the emergency room staff to access should you have that unfortunate circumstance. So that means when you go to the emergency room, instead of the staff there not knowing anything about you, when you walk in, they at least can, if you've released the contact for your mom or for your sponsor, maybe in your support group, then they can call that person, and that person who is not in immediate danger or crisis can come or at least over the phone help tell your story and help them understand what it is, where you're at in your recovery process, and what it is that you need, and so that the emergency room staff can provide better care for you. I can only imagine that that's going to reduce the time they spend wondering who you are and wondering how to help you. So it's going to save time and it's going to save money because you're going to get the treatment that you need and they're going to link you right back to the services or that you need as well. So you'll spend less time waiting around in the hallways while they wait for figuring out what to do with you because they're going to connect you back to the people that know you and that care about you.
What is this tool doing for children in terms of giving them more of a voice in their mental health care?
Absolutely. No, so we separate parts of your story into 12 parts. And one of those parts is your opinions. And that is around your voice, right? So there is a whole part of the story that is about, do you feel that your voice has been involved in the care decisions? Do you feel that your counselors or your clinicians, have done their part in understanding your story? So we don't ask those questions or have the, suggest anyone does, but should they want to, or should the person in care want to submit such questions, they can. So there is that ability to have more of a voice in care because first of all, you know your own story now. Right now, what your treatment plan is generally a mystery. It is some clinical document that you never see, that some supervisor sees somewhere that checks off some, requirements of some regulation of some law. And you never actually see what your goals in care are. In fact, you may not have any goals that you know about. So now with PIECES, you get to be part of that care plan. You get to see your own story. You get to participate in your treatment plan. You get to have a voice in those decisions, and you get to track on your progress. Typically, as it goes now, as I mentioned, folks don't have a lot of goals in care that they know about. They just stay in care. They stay in care and they stay in care and they stay in care. But where's the progress? How do we know that we're building those resiliency factors? We're building those skills. We're addressing that anxiety. Are we ever measuring our anxiety or thinking about it or seeing if it's reducing? Or are we just waiting for that crisis, that next crisis? So that's how they can participate more in their own care.
What implications could your tool have in the long run for these young patients, especially as they grow up and become adults?
I would hope, and it is my goal, that people who would use our tools would have more self-sufficiency and insight into their own well-being. They would understand what their triggers are, because we would be able to help them look at the temporal association between activities that they're doing and responses that they're having. They would not only be able to see, is going to talk therapy and doing mindfulness having an impact on my anxiety, but they'd also be able to see, is spending 8 hours on social media having an impact on my social anxiety, right? So they would be able to see and begin to become more self-aware of the activities that they're doing and the impact on their well-being in different areas of their life. That's our goal. And we're working hard toward that, and the project we have toward that is called OptiRhythms, and it is about folks understanding the optimal rhythms of their day so that they can improve their well-being.
And lastly, is there anything else you'd like to touch on that we haven't already discussed?
You know, we are working toward, on our OptiRhythms project, making, integrating biometrics as well from smartwatches and from what you're already tracking on your phone, so that you can see not only about your anxiety, but your physical steps, your nutrition, whatever you're tracking on your phone, your heart rate. How are those impacted based on the activities that you're doing, whether those be activities in care or just simple things like getting more sleep or drinking more water or walking more? How is that impacting your mental health? So we really want to work toward that more holistic view of well-being, because that's going to impact mental health, but it's also going to help you become more self-sufficient in your own care, because we have a long way to go before we defragment the care across the different programs that exist for a whole person.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Databook. Make sure you follow us on Twitter @ChiefHealthExec and on LinkedIn and Facebook. Until next time, I'm your host, Skylar Jeremias.